Log Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. Today we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program once again. He comes on every other week and talks about a lot of interesting topics that are relevant to the everyday lives of working people. And Alan, once again, I'd like to welcome you to our program today.
Well, thanks for having me again, Stuart.
Alan, we're discussing a topic that the whole nation is talking about. Because, you know, people were looking at Obamacare being rolled out and introduced, that it was going to be providing affordable health care. And now, within recent weeks, we can see that Obamacare has, in the eyes of millions of people, has just been a complete nightmare with this rollout. It was a program and legislation that was designed and went into law in 2010. Now we're seeing some of the initial impact of this legislation. But Alan, where did Obamacare go completely wrong? That's the name of our program today. Where did Obamacare go completely wrong?
Well, it went completely wrong by continuing to make health care a for-profit system in this country, and that's the bottom line. You know, the insurance companies themselves have complained that they're not making enough profit, and Obama keeps, changing the rules to benefit the insurance companies. Even here in Minnesota, the governor received a letter. At first he was supporting Obamacare completely, everything Obama did, and the insurance company sent him a letter saying that what was going on wasn't allowing them to profit, so he changed the rules. And every step of the way, they've changed the rules to benefit the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical industry, the doctors, and all for the sake of profit. And I think everybody can see that now. If you look at the plans themselves, I don't think most people have even had a chance to look at the so-called plans they have. It's like they're trading in the metals, the scrap metal industry or something. They have the silver plan, the bronze plan, the gold plan, and the catastrophic plan, the platinum plan. And if you look at them, the only difference is in what you pay in the premiums, and the maximum that people have to pay out of pocket, it almost all adds up together no matter which plan you get. So the insurance companies end up making a big profit. You know,
right.
How can people afford to pay $6,000 or $12,000 if you're an individual person? You pay under the silver plan, the bronze plan, the basic plan. You pay around a little over $6,000 out of your pocket every year.
Out of your pocket.
Yeah, out of your pocket. If you have a family of four, you pay around $12,000 a year out of your pocket. You know, who can afford this? And then Obama's supporters come along and say, "Whoa, just buy, instead of getting the bronze plan, buy into the silver plan." And like, you know, people have the money to do this.
Right, like they have the money.
Yeah, and every step of the way is to benefit the insurance companies. From the insurance companies themselves, they said, under the new federal law, insurance companies have been counting on profits from selling new plans to healthy people in order to offset losses due to the requirement that they sell plans to people with existing health problems. So, you know, right there you have the bottom line. The bottom line is profits in all of this. And this plan was the
Affordable Care Act, and we're going to get into that in a little bit. Why in the world would they call it the Affordable Care Act? But we can see that this, when it was initially introduced, it was 2,200 pages. And when they did a survey of the senators and congresspeople that were looking at bringing this into law, Alan, it was less than a handful to say that they had even read the documents, read the bill before they put this into law. Alan, it was less than like 10 or 15 of congresspeople and senators that even bothered to read this. And Alan, we can see that has been anything other than affordable. Now, the thing is, I want you to explain who were the ones that actually put together this particular document before it went to Congress.
Well, it was a lobbyist for the insurance and pharmaceutical industry and the American Medical Association. I mean, that's pretty obvious. They're the ones that are benefiting from this, not the people. And, that's the bottom line. It's about their profits. The doctors, they literally make me sick, their responses in this whole struggle. Many of the doctors, thousands of doctors, around 15,000 doctors, claimed that they were supporting single payer. And they supported single payer because it benefited them instead of the insurance and pharmaceutical companies. But the doctors are still profiting.
Mm-hmm.
And so single payer was acceptable to them. And as soon as they found out that Obamacare was going to be even more profitable for the doctors, they switched to Obamacare right away and sold out the single-payer struggle. So, the only people that haven't had a say in anything about health care right now in this country are the American people, the majority of the American people for whom health care is supposed to be a human right.
Now, Alan, one of the other things that is in the minds of a lot of people such as like you and myself, when we keep up on this, is that through Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is that much of the government subsidies that were available that would help the poor people that could not afford care for themselves, now much of those subsidies have also been cut back as well to the tune of billions of dollars. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Well, the way that works, again, they claim that they're giving, if your income is so low that essentially the government will give you the bronze plan. But even if they give you the bronze plan, you're still responsible for these out-of-pocket expenses. And what will happen is it will force people into bankruptcy even quicker than if they would have done nothing. And, bankruptcy in the insurance, in the healthcare field, is one of the main reasons for bankruptcies in this country, and it's making these people extremely rich, and you've got this whole industry that's sprung up around bankruptcies in healthcare, the lawyers and everything else who are going to stand to make a big, big profit. So, that's the other aspect of this. So there's just no way out. They're not giving people anything by giving them the bronze plan. All they're giving them is the opportunity to file bankruptcy because they can't afford to pay their bills. You have to be extremely poor. They say that the only people that will benefit are about probably 4 to 6 or 7 million really poor people in this country. And the rest of the population is going to pay through the nose. But that's the way everything has happened under Obamacare, and these people that support Obama will hold this up and say, oh, look at these, the very poorest people are the ones that are going to really make out under Obamacare. And, that is true to some extent. It's true that, 4 to 6 million people may benefit from Obamacare. We don't even know if that's true yet. But,
right.
You know, what is 4 to 6 million people compared to an entire nation of people that are going to be literally screwed by Obamacare? And that's
now,
the bottom line.
Well, when you say an entire nation, when you look at 170 million people in this country that have insurance through their various companies that they work with, and matter of fact, tomorrow I had the company I work with, they have a special enrollment, and of course that's probably going to be bad news, but 170 million people that had plans that were taking care of the basic needs of their family, some type of health care that was provided through their employer, but now of this 170 million people, many of them will find themselves having to either switch the type of coverage they have or something that's going to be a lot more expensive. So,
right.
Alan, where did the president, when he was telling people that if you have your doctors, you can keep your doctors, whatever plans, you can keep your plans, where did he go wrong on that? Was that just another lie?
Well, yeah, it's just another lie from Obama. Everything about Obama from the time he's run for election has been just lie after lie, and Obamacare is no different. Obama himself is one big lie. I mean, a great big lie was created to elect him as president. You know, they pushed him as a president for peace. They pushed him as a president who supposedly supported single payer. There's a video of him clearly stating that he supported single payer, and he specifically said he supported the Canadian style healthcare system. You know, it was just another lie. Everything about Obama has been lie after lie after lie, and Obamacare is no different. The American people are in. I mean, we haven't even begun to see how people are going to be hurt by Obamacare. And like you said, you know, at first he said that people could keep their present insurance for a year. And like here in Minnesota now, the governor said, no, you know, I support Obamacare, but we're not going to allow people to do that. And the reason the governor did that is because he got a letter from the insurance company saying that if you do this, we're going to have to subsidize all these sick people that we're putting onto our rolls. So you got to allow us to charge these people more. And, you know, that's what this is all about. Money, money, money. Profits, profits, profits. It's not about health care at all. You know, countries all over the world provide their people with health care, and profits aren't even involved. You have Finland, you have Sweden, you have Cuba, where there are no profits at all, and none, zilch, involved
none,
in health care. And they have the cheapest health care in the world, and yet, you know, one of the best health care systems. You know, you have Canada, that the cost of their health care is about, what is it, 60% less, I think, than here in the United States. And the doctors still profit from health care, but you know, the Canadian people, I lived in Canada for 10 years. They give you a card for social insurance and for health care, and you walk into a doctor's office or a hospital and you show the card. You're never asked about paying anything, not having to pay a single penny. You show your card and you get whatever health care you need. And there's a deduction in on your wages, just like your payroll deductions and Social Security. And, you know, it's a very small amount. It's nothing compared to, you know, insurance here in this country. So, you know, we could be doing the same thing. That was a proposal made by Francis Perkins, who was Roosevelt's Secretary of Labor. It had been proposed, and a socialized health care system was actually was part of the New Deal, and Roosevelt dropped it under all kinds of opposition from the American Medical Association. He called it a Bolshevik plot, and these right-wing Democrats who were elected by the insurance industry and everything. So that was taken off the from being talked about, and it was never voted on. And yet Francis Perkins said we should finance a socialized health care system just like Social Security with the payroll tax. And that would have been agreeable to people. But now we have to look at it from a different perspective. we can have a socialized health care system, which I call a national public health care system, that's publicly financed, publicly administered, and publicly delivered, just like public education, the exact same kind of system how public education operates in this country. You know, we have a good public school system, and we could have a good health care system that operates the exact same way. It's
right.
Foolish. Nobody would send their kids to school thinking they had to pay a teacher to teach their kids to read and write and do math on an individual basis. You know, why would we do this with health care? It doesn't even make any sense.
Alan, when we look at how is this going to affect also many of the seniors, millions of seniors throughout the country, and one of the things we're going to discuss a little bit about the association with people in this country living a lot longer because of technologies that and advancements in technologies. But we have even seniors. I mean, we look at the government expenditures that they use for health care, such as for Medicare. And the government, over a period of time, is going to be slashing $700 billion from Medicare. How is that going to affect our seniors in this country?
Well, seniors are already being affected. There's my mother
already.
My mother's almost 93 years old, and her supplemental insurance has almost doubled now in the last 2 years with Obamacare coming on, and her co-pays for medicines have skyrocketed out of sight. You know, she can hardly afford it with her Social Security. And this is, if you talk to seniors all over, this is happening with them. Now they say, well, in New York, the price has come down. And again, this is what happens under Obamacare. A few people do see some benefits for some things, but the majority of the people will suffer increases. You know, this is the nature of Obama and his administration and everything that he has done. It's a game that he plays. It's a very, very sick game that he's playing with the American people, no matter what he does. And there's always a very few people that will benefit from something that he does, but the overwhelming majority of the people get screwed. This is the nature of Obama.
Now, if we go back just several years ago before this became law, they were talking about a public option. Would that have made any difference when we look in hindsight, if they had that piece of legislation, that being a part of the legislation that was introduced, would that have made any difference, Alan?
I don't believe it would have. I believe that it's all a scheme and a scam. And, you know, we'll never know because we don't even know what Obama really had in mind when he talked about this public option. Because he, you know, misled people about what Obamacare is.
Well, he was opposed to it.
He misled people by talking about that he was for single payer when he ran for president. So we don't really know. I think he just plays these mind games with people and builds up their hope that they're going to get something better, and then he changes completely to benefit the Wall Street crowd. I mean, every step of the way. So we'll never know what he really meant by a public option. And, you know, when I think about a public option, I think in terms of a socialized healthcare system. And we live in the richest country in the world. There's no reason why we can't have a world-class national public healthcare system. That's what I call a public option. And I'm sure
right.
I have a completely different opinion of what a
public option
is than Obama. What?
Now, I say that is a public option, and we're going to get a little bit more into that about single payer and also a national health care program. Alan, just a few days ago, the president, he was speaking to supporters, and he was saying that he has now delivered on universal health care. Was that another lie?
Well, of course it's another lie. Forcing people to buy into something where they actually get nothing, that makes it a lie. Like I said, anybody can look at the plans for themselves, from the bronze, the silver, the the gold, the platinum, the catastrophic. You know, the catastrophic is a real joke. You're asking for bankruptcy to buy into that plan, and actually you're asking for bankruptcy if you get sick. I mean, really sick, and it requires thousands and thousands of dollars for a hospital stay. You're looking at bankruptcy.
You're looking at bankruptcy.
Because there's no way out for you. If you're so poor, you got to buy the silver plan. You know, how the heck are you going to afford $12,000 out of your pocket every year for your family? You know, and $12,000 isn't that, when you think about it. You know, if you've got a family of four and you got a couple little kids, you know, $12,000 isn't that much. Every time you go to the doctor, it's $100. You know, just for a cold, it's $100. It's $150. You know, the kids get a sore throat or an earache, you got a couple hundred dollars. You know, it's going to just pile up and pile up. People are going to put this on. What are they going to do? They're going to put it on their credit cards. And, you know, that credit card bill is going to go year after year after year, and they're going to be paying interest, you know, 20, 22%, 24% interest on their credit card to pay for earaches and, you know, sore throats and colds and, you know, little aches and pains. And you can't go to a doctor now for less than $100 every visit. And if you get medicine, you're going to have to pay for that.
It's $100 just to talk to the receptionist.
Yeah, exactly. And
Alan, before Obamacare, before it was rolled out in 2010, we even had the Congressional Budget Office. They were saying that 31 million people would remain uninsured. When Obama took office, there were 46 million people in this country with no health care insurance at all. You had well over 100 million people that were underinsured. Now, when you consider those numbers, Alan, I mean, when we're talking about 100 million people, if the Congressional Budget Office were telling them that you're still going to have a problem, why wasn't anyone listening?
They didn't want to listen because the lobbyists for the health insurance industry were calling all the shots. They were laughing behind our backs. Even, you know, for Medicaid and Medicare and stuff, the doctors are allowed to set the prices and for their procedures. You know, that was even exposed in the Wall Street Journal. You know, who allows the people that are already gouging people to establish the prices they're going to charge? This is ridiculous. You know, and the doctors, if you tell the doctors this, they act like you're insulting them. But, you know, why didn't they allow the people to set the charges of what they think medical procedure should be? I think it would be a little bit reversed, you know, and then the doctors wouldn't be smiling. And, you know, these doctors are making out like bandits, and they don't even want to talk about that. They were just happy that we don't have some kind of national public health care system where they would be put on the payroll just like the teachers. You know, and I saw an article about healthcare in Finland written by an American doctor, and all he did, I mean, it was thousands of words, this article, and all this doctor did was complain that they were cheating Finnish doctors because they were paid so little compared to American doctors, you know. But if you think about it, if you go into a doctor's office, you know, for a routine visit, what are you actually getting? You're not getting anything more than you would get from what your kid gets from a high school history teacher or chemistry teacher or science teacher. You know, you're getting a person's knowledge, and what makes that worth so much money? I don't understand it. Somebody's going to have to explain that to me. You know, these doctors are getting paid way, way too much for what they do. And, you know, I like to see people get paid decent wages and everything, but these doctors, they should be put on the public payroll in a public health care system and paid like a teacher or a professor. I mean, I think people would consider that fair. And, you know, if these doctors don't like it, many of them who come from very wealthy families to start with, you know, we should go through the ghettos and the burials and the Indian reservations and tell kids, you do good in school, and we're going to give you a free education and become a doctor. And these kids will be happy to work for, you know, $100,000 a year, you know. And we would have all the doctors we need in this country.
Here's one of the other things. One day we're going to have a program on Obama lies, because we may even have to do that as a two-part series. But Obama's, you know, is another statement he sends is saying that the Affordable Care Act constitutes genuine social reform.
Yeah.
Genuine social reform.
Yeah, well, Obama doesn't understand.
Social in what sense?
He doesn't understand what reform even means. You know, he should look in a dictionary. Reform means to make something better. And, you know, they keep using this reform over and over again in the Obama administration. And we have seen nothing getting better. You know, how can you have reforms if things are getting worse, if something is making something worse, which Obamacare does? Obamacare is not a reform. It's not, you know, some people tried to pass it off as an insurance reform. It's not even an insurance reform, because the insurance companies end up making more money and the people end up paying even more. So, you know, this, nothing about this is a reform. People can look in the dictionary and see what that word means. It means to make something better. And, you know, like you say, one more lie, and it's the lies.
Yeah, that's
going to
be a two-part series.
Yeah, you can't, it's mind-boggling to even think of the lies that come out of Obama.
Yeah, I mean, starting saying, and we'll get into where monies could come from to pay for health care, such as Obama saying he was going to end the war within the first 9 months in office. That was one of the bigger lies he told as well.
Yeah.
We see also, I was just reading recently where it says many companies have already shifted their retirees off of company-administered health plans and onto privately run health care exchanges that offer plans with few benefits and large out-of-pocket expenses. But, Alan, we see the same thing with many cities and local governments that are doing the same thing. They're taking them out off of these plans and they're shifting them onto private plans. What are the ramifications that we're going to see with this nationwide, with many companies doing that with retirees?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the ramifications are going to be at this point.
You have a lot of seniors and older people, people that are retired that thought that they had some type of safety net, that are going to find themselves in bankruptcy. People that are retired, and next thing, if they go to a hospital, they won't be able to afford the cost of what they got, and they definitely won't be able to afford the expenses once they find out what it's going to take to care for them.
Yeah, the main ramification is what it is in general, and that's that you're going to see a tremendous shift of wealth. It's a way to take away what people have. You know, Obama talks about how he's a president for the middle class, and you know, if you look at Obamacare, the main thrust of it is everything they can from people that are making between $25,000 and $70,000 a year and taking more away from them and putting this money into the hands of the rich. And many of the people that are retired or near retirement are going to really suffer, because they're going to see even more of their what they have taken away from them through Obamacare and passed on to the rich. So it's just a continual passing of money from the hands of what they call the middle income and middle class people to the very wealthy. And that's what they went after. They knew there was money there that they could get, and they went after it, and they found a way to get it, and they found that the way to get it was through Obamacare. And it's a major shift of wealth in this country once again.
Right.
You know, there's another problem. You know, I really have a personal bone to pick with Obamacare, because they keep talking about personal responsibility with health care and everything. Well, I represent workers in the Indian gaming industry, and in this Indian gaming industry, there's close to 2 million people employed across this country, and every single one of these people work in smoke-filled casinos.
Right.
And, you know, Obamacare...
And that's a health risk right there.
Yeah, that creates a massive health problem, and yet the Democrats will do nothing to stop the smoking in the casinos. In, here in Minnesota and then in Wisconsin and Michigan, Democrats made legislation to make all free except for this casino Indian gaming industry. You know, so you leave thousands of people working in these smoke-filled casinos. What does that do to the people's health? It makes it not only very expensive, but it makes it so that people are dying at a very young age and getting sick at a very young age, heart and lung diseases, cancers. You know, all kinds of problems are related to the secondhand smoke. When a person has to work in these kinds of conditions, 8, 10, 12, 14, and 16 hours a day, you know. So it's up to me, none of these politicians are serious about this at all, or they would have stopped the smoking in the casinos. They could have cut health care costs right there by stopping that smoking in the casinos. And I've talked to people, I've been asking people what they're being asked when they go and try and get some of these insurance plans. And one of the, they say, well, I work in a casino and there's a lot of smoke. And they people tell them, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. You know, so the people are being told to lie to start with, and that'll supposedly keep their costs down when they go to get insurance. But what's going to happen when it's found out that they lied and they work in these smoke-filled casinos? You know, they're going to be stuck with an even larger health care bill. So, you know, all this talk, to when I look at it personally from the people that I represent, it means nothing. That these people are allowing people to die left and right and getting sick and piling all kinds of expenses onto their family because these people are getting cancers and heart problems at young ages. You know, this is the epitome of hypocrisy as far as I'm concerned.
Alan, we see a lot of talk on television about Republicans. They're criticizing Obamacare and, you know, how it was a lie and how it's affecting working people and how it's affecting employers, and it's just one thing after another. Don't even turn to Fox. They're like nonstop. But back in 2009 and 2010, when they could have stood up to the plate and offered something else, they didn't either. And I, even today, when they're criticizing Obamacare, I see them going back to the same old types of plans and what were available to working people then. That's all they're talking about, is that we need to go back to what we had. But when they were in, when they had the House and they had the Senate, just going back under the Bush administration, they had 46. They left 46 million people, you know, without any type of health care. Not to mention the tens of millions that had health care that were not even able to take care of the needs of those families. But Alan, what the Republicans—they are being so critical. But as I see it, they are part of the problem.
Well, this is part of the dog and pony show we're being subjected to as the American people. And Obamacare is nothing but Romney care on steroids. If you look
right
at Obamacare, it was a plan developed by the most reactionary Republicans, by the Heritage Foundation and these other, the Cato Institute and these other think tanks. And right from the beginning, Obamacare has been a Republican health care plan. And now the Republicans come and say, no, we don't support it. Well, this is just a dog and pony show. It's hypocrisy at its worst. And these Republicans, they've done this every step of the way. Obama has baited them into making things worse. And then Obama blames the Republicans, and the Republicans turn around and blame Obama. And, you know, neither one of them are correct on anything. And in the end, Wall Street is getting what they want. They're getting what they want from the Democrats, and they're getting what they want from the Republicans. And Wall Street sits back and laughs as the American people try and sort through all this confusion that's been created. And that's what it is, a massive amount of confusion. And in order to keep people confused so they can bamboozle the people and keep the profits flowing from the poorest among us to the very wealthiest. And that's what this is all about. It's a massive transfer of wealth to the rich. And these people on Wall Street know this darn well. And this is what we got to put an end to. This is what the American people got to start talking about, real health care reform, making things better. The only way to do that now is to fight for a national public health care system. Single-payer will not solve the problem. I supported single-payer here in Minnesota. I wrote the resolution that was passed by the Democratic Party state convention on single-payer, in support of single-payer. It's the best resolution that's come out of the Democratic Party so far. And, you know, they turned around after we fought for this resolution. For 6 years, I traveled every county in Minnesota recruiting delegates to run for the state convention to back our resolution on single-payer. At the next convention, they brought forward a resolution that added the word affordable and sabotaged the entire resolution. So, you know, this is the way these people operate. We can't start with a compromise. If you look, you know, single payer is an idea that's come down from Canada. And if you look at what happened in Canada, Tommy Douglas was the leader of the reform movement for health care, and he called for a socialized public health care system in Canada. He started to build a socialized health care system in the province of Saskatchewan. And the liberals and the conservatives in Canada, they got scared and they said, whoa, you know, we got to do something to stop this guy. So they came forward with a single-payer plan. And it left the doctors to get profits and it left private delivery of health care in place. And that was the compromise. Tommy Douglas accepted it as the compromise, the best that could be won at the time because the people's movement wasn't strong enough. But he kept telling the Canadian people, you've got to move towards socialized health care. This single-payer system is only going to benefit us so long, and then we're going to end up, you know, just like the Americans. And we cannot bring forward reforms like single-payer without saying that these reforms are a step towards a socialized or a national public health care system. And that's when I went across the state of Minnesota, I told people, I said, here are the options. We can have a for-profit system like we have now. We can have single-payer, or we can develop some kind of public health care system. And when you explain to people what these different systems actually are, people will always choose the public health care system, always. And people do not want profits in health care, and this is where the struggle has to be mounted. So here in Minnesota, when we pushed the single-payer health care system, we pushed it as a step towards a public health care system. And this
and
is
Alan,
what people were voting for.
And we're going to talk in the second we actually have around another 20 minutes to go, but a couple of things, and then we're going to talk about single-payer, which you've already gotten into that, and also getting into a national health care program. And how are we to pay for that? But a couple of things I wanted to focus on, because people need to realize that the worst of Obamacare, they haven't even seen it yet. Alan,
no.
They haven't even seen it. They haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg.
No,
Alan, because what we're looking at is, first of all, it's going to be fines that's going to be the watchdog, the Internal Revenue Service, and I think everyone on this program, they know about that. And also, Alan, bankruptcies. We're going to see bankruptcies skyrocketing across the country, and even the possibility where they'll be saying that you cannot put this in bankruptcies, like we see with education today. But speak on those two things about the potential fines and also the bankruptcies that we'll be looking at in the future.
Well, the potential fines, the IRS is going to go into people, into their bank accounts, or they'll guarantee their wages. And what will happen, they're already talking about modifying this Obamacare to make it like the student loan so that people can't put their health care into bankruptcy, so that these insurance companies and the doctors and the hospitals will be able to take away people's homes and everything else, and to collect on what they owe for their health care bills. And this is another travesty of justice. People can look at the student loan situation, and it's almost impossible to put a student loan into bankruptcy. There are some little ways and some loopholes to get around that, but very few. And, you know, if you have a student loan, they're going to get that from you for through your guaranteeing your wages, or taking it directly out of your bank account, or taking it out of your what you're entitled to get back in your income tax returns. And the same thing is going to happen with Obamacare. That's the way they're going to collect. And, you know, the government has that power to do this to people, and as individuals, we've got no power at all against the government. And, you know, on a student loan, if a student loan, even if they've made a mistake, I've talked to students, and they said, well, we stopped, we dropped this class or that class, and yet they still charged them for it. And even though they shouldn't be charged for it, they come after them and come after them, and they will never admit that they were wrong in charging the students for that class, and the students will get charged $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 for a class that they never even took.
That they
and
never
the government
even took.
Will not admit that they're wrong.
Right.
And we'll see the same thing with Obamacare. You know, this is the nature of the beast.
Today we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program today, and Alan is a regular guest on our program, brings a lot of good information in regards to social issues that working class people are confronted with every day. Today our program and the topic is, where did Obamacare go completely wrong? And Alan, thanks again for joining the program.
Well, thanks for having me. You
know, Alan, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the other thing that's going to happen, and we all know this is going to happen, nobody wants to admit it, but once people get these insurance plans, when you walk into your doctor's office, you're going to see his the rates for all of his or her procedures, you know, just about double. And they'll say, oh, you got insurance. We'll get the insurance, and plus we'll get, you know, another amount from you. And this is what's going to happen. And they're going to allow that. They allow it to happen with Medicaid and Medicare, and it's going to keep going on right through Obamacare. And the American...
It's just going to turn out to be a complete nightmare.
Yeah. It's just like what happened when the mom and pop grocery stores went out of business. People said, oh, isn't it great? We can get stuff cheaper at these big supermarkets now and everything. But what happened after the small grocery stores went out of business? Prices went up. You know, the monopolies took over and set the prices where they wanted them. And the same thing is going to happen with this health care. Only thing, it's going to be worse because... you know, when you get sick, you've got no options, none at all. You got to go to the doctor, you got to go to the hospital, and you're stuck with what they charge you.
Right. Alan, regarding Obamacare, should it be appeal or repeal?
Well, it should. I don't know what you mean by appeal. But
wait,
it should,
appeal, in other words, you're going to make changes to it. Changes to the law. Should Congress make changes to the law, or should they just completely do away with the law?
We should do away with it, just completely. The whole thing should be rescinded. It's you know, it's a farce and a fiasco, and it should, you know, but that's not going to happen under the present structure we got with the Democrats and Republicans in charge. In order to do this now, we're going to have a whole new political movement, a new political party in this country that's going to put on the table. The only way that this is ever going to be rescinded is if we put an option on the table for the American people to consider with a national public health care system. That's what the American people are going to have to mull over in their minds before they're going to be prepared to fight Obamacare. It's the only way, and this is up to the left in our country to do, because nobody else is going to do it. The left has to be the catalyst for this change that's got to come about with health care. And the only option in this country is for a national public health care system. It doesn't make any difference if it's paid for through a payroll tax, or if we pay for it with cuts in the military budget or taxes on the wealthy. One way or another, probably a combination of all three of those, but one way or another, the solution is a national public health care system. There is no other solution to our problems. Single payer will not solve this problem. Single payer would be a Band-Aid, a little Band-Aid on a massive wound. And the doctors will continue to benefit. They'd be happy with single payer. But I think the majority of the American people, you know, would welcome a national public health care system. I don't
well,
think anybody
Alan,
can play.
I would like for you to explain to our listeners, what is the difference between single payer and a national health care program? What are the differences? Because a lot of people on the left, including an organization that I'm affiliated with, the Socialist Party USA, we have many other organizations. I know you've been in touch with the Peace and Freedom Party. We have many, including the Green Party. They advocate a single-payer health care system, many on the left. You say a national health care program, which I'm very supportive right. of a national health care program. But what are the differences?
Okay. The main difference in a single-payer system, you have public financing and public administration of the health care system, but you still have private delivery. In other words, the doctors are allowed to make whatever profit they want from the health care system. You have the pharmaceutical companies and all these private industries that are allowed to profit from the health care system. But you have public financing and public administration and this private delivery. Under a national public health care system, you would have public financing, public administration, plus public delivery of health care. In other words, the doctors would be put on the payroll. Pharmaceutical companies would no longer be able to profit. They would probably be put out of business, just like the insurance companies, and the whole health care industry nationalized and placed under public ownership. And this is what we need. You know.
Okay, Alan, I'm going to ask you, while you're still on that, where would the financing come from for single payer? In other words, how would you finance single payer? How would you finance a national health care program? Explain the differences. Because
okay,
you say single payer, where's the funds coming from?
There are various schemes to finance single payer that I've seen. Some
right.
of the schemes aren't much better than what's offered under Obamacare. But
right.
The way I would advocate for a single payer would be just like they do in Canada with a payroll tax. And
so in other words, it's a tax.
It's actually very little. Nobody complains in Canada about what they – I've never heard a single complaint in Canada about what people pay through their payroll taxes for their health care system compared to what they get. No, nobody complains about it. I mean, nobody.
Okay. Now, Alan, you're saying it's a tax. In other words, the government tax.
Right.
And then the services are delivered by private doctors and medical facilities. Is that correct?
Correct. Although in different provinces in Canada, healthcare is becoming more and more socialized because they're finding that private delivery isn't working. So like in the province of Manitoba, almost all the nurses actually work for the province. They don't work for the private hospitals anymore. They're government employees.
In Canada, is it single payer or is it a national health care program?
It's single payer that's rapidly merging into a national health care system. And that's being fought by the conservatives and the liberals. But the New Democratic Party, like if you look at Manitoba where the New Democratic Party has been in control for years, the health care system is actually step by step, you might say in baby steps and in incremental steps, is moving towards a public health care system, much like public education. And
let me ask you something that you've mentioned before. Is single payer a first step to a national health care program?
It could be. I would advocate that that's one option. I'm not totally opposed to single payer, Stuart, but I don't see it as the real solution to health care. Many of these people, physicians for a national health care program, they see it as the final solution to health care. And, you know, I've had arguments with Margaret Flowers about this, and she tells me that the only reason she doesn't advocate for a national public health care system like I'm talking about is because all the doctors would drop out of the Physicians for a National Health Care program, and they wouldn't have much of a membership left because all these doctors care about is their own profits. They're completely happy to see the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies shoved out of the picture, provided they can keep their big salaries, and
mm-hmm.
you know that's what they're looking at. The doctors in this country, like you know, they're very selfish people, and they only care about themselves. They don't they care about money, money, money. Many of these people that are doctors, they come from very wealthy families. These are the only people that can afford to become doctors. It costs a lot of money to go through medical school. So you get a bunch of the children of the rich who become doctors. I mean, I think we all know that. We don't want to talk mm-hmm. about that much because, you know, we figure we're insulting these doctors and everything. But, I mean, this is a fact we have to talk about. And like I say, I'm not opposed to single payer if it's looked at as a step towards national public health care, although I think we can avoid that step, and we should.
Right.
And the reason we should, probably because we should penalize these Wall Street people and say, you know, we're not going to go along with your baby steps and incremental solutions because you've given us the shaft with this Obamacare. And, you know, we should have the courage to stand up and fight these people and fight for what we actually need. And what we actually need, and nobody can deny this, I can't find one single person that will publicly debate me on the issue of whether or not we need single-payer Obamacare or a national public health care system like I advocate. They won't debate me because they're afraid. They're afraid that their idea will lose out once everything is put before the American people.
Well, Alan, I wouldn't even want to debate you on that.
Well,
I think we're on the same side of the fence.
You know, I've invited the doctors from the physicians.
Oh, I know they won't.
Program to debate this, and that they won't, and because they know that I'm going to throw in their faces that they're getting rich off of health care. This is the bottom line. I don't care if it's a pharmaceutical company or, you know, somebody that sells health equipment or anybody else. Nobody should be allowed to profit off of people being kept well and being made well once they're sick. The health care is a human right, and we shouldn't even be approaching this from the perspective of some people are allowed to keep their profits. Just take that right off the table right now and fight for the kind of health care system we actually need where people come before profits.
Alan, how would we pay for a national health care program? Because we know over a period of a decade, it's going to cost trillions of dollars, trillions.
Yeah,
how would we pay for this?
It's going to cost trillions, but we would pay for it the same way we're paying for these wars. In fact, we would take the money. We would have to stop these wars, just like for any other reform in this country. If we're going to see any reforms in this country at all, Stuart, anymore, we're going to have to stop this insanity with the militarism and these wars and start putting that money towards the things that people really need. And it's no different for health care. We're not going to, you know, if we want to finance a world-class public health care system, we're going to have to stop these wars and end this militarism and put that money towards health care. But people, they brainwash people in this country into thinking that health care has to be expensive. It has to be expensive if you got all these people, these corporations and doctors with their
for profit.
Fingers in the till taking out profits, then it becomes expensive. But if you take away the profits, health care is cheaper to provide to the people than public education. This is a fact. The Finns found this out. The Cubans found this out. In every country around the world, in Canada, they found this out. It's cheaper to provide the American people with health care than it is to provide the people with a public education. This is a fact. Nobody can dispute this. You know, we have children. They have to go to school every single day. They need a teacher there. They need a whole administration there. And, you know, with health care, you go to the doctor. Most people go to the doctor maybe once or twice, you know, three times a year, four times a year, whatever. And providing people with this this health care is cheaper than providing people with a public education. So people say, how much is this going to cost? I can't say what it's going to cost, but I can say one thing as a fact. A national public health care system will cost us less than our educational system.
Right.
And this is a lot less than what we spend on war. If we're not going to transfer the economy to a peacetime economy and start using this money to meet people's needs, like for health care, then we're going to have to tax the rich. Or otherwise, you know, if we want to self-finance this, we can do it just like Francis Perkins suggested, have it as a payroll tax just like Social Security. I don't think anybody in this country would object to they would be paying less for health care than what they pay on their Social Security. The employer would pay a portion, and the worker would pay a portion, and it would be deducted from their paycheck, and it would be less than what we're paying into Social Security. So,
Alan, how successful has it been in Sweden, Finland, and Cuba, their healthcare program?
Well, I personally haven't been to any of those countries. I have been to Canada. And
I mean, what you know, I know you haven't been there, but what you know of that, of their programs?
Well, the people love it. I mean, if you look on the internet and see what people have to say about their healthcare systems in Finland or Cuba or any of these other countries, Sweden or Norway, the people love their healthcare system.
And that's what I've been reading, the same thing. I mean, you only see positive things that people believe that they have the best system in the world. Why didn't we model our healthcare program, if you want to call it a program, I call it a disaster. Why wasn't Obamacare, why didn't they use those as models? I mean, Sweden, I mean, Finland, I mean, I know some people say, well, Cuba, you know, but we're talking about Sweden and Finland. They have programs at work. Why didn't we look at those models for designing one for the people of this country?
Well, for the same reason we wouldn't look at the Canadian model, and that's that it wouldn't be profitable to the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies and the whole healthcare industry, the insurance industry. And they only looked – we have a Congress that's the lobbyists bribe them, these lobbyists that work for the healthcare industry the same way they work for the military-industrial complex, and, in fact, a lot of times they're the same lobbyists. And you have these people bribing the United States Congress to look in only one direction when it comes to health care, and that's to where they can make the biggest profits. And so their lobbying money goes to these Democrats and Republicans. The same lobbyists lobby both the Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, if you look at, like here in Minnesota, I've examined where the campaign contributions come from that these politicians are getting. The number one... The number one campaign contributor to Democrats and Republicans is the health insurance companies here in Minnesota. The second largest contributor to their campaigns is the Indian gaming industry. So this tells us something, you know. The Indian gaming industry is controlled by a bunch of mobsters who own these slot machines and use the Native American communities as their front. So, you know, these politicians accept the money from these mobsters, knowing that they're mobsters. They work hand-in-hand with these mobsters. And on the other hand, they're working hand-in-hand with the healthcare industry. So what does that tell you? That they get more money from the healthcare industry than they do from the mobsters, but it's neck-and-neck, turkey-neck, practically, you know.
And as you mentioned, Alan, as you mentioned, is big profit in the healthcare industry, and you see many of these doctors here in California making anywhere from $350,000 a year to over $500,000 for the income. So you can imagine the institutions that they're working for are making billions of dollars. And these wars are costing us over $5 trillion since the beginning of the war with Iraq and Afghanistan. Alan, thanks again for joining the program. Alan, could you give your contact information, how people can reach you?
Sure. They can Google my name, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and they'll come across my blog, the Podunk blog, and that has all my contact information there. Or they can call me at 218-386-2432.
And, Alan, we'll be looking forward to having you to join our program once again in 2 weeks. And, again, I would like to thank our listeners for joining the Socialist Insight. Be certain to call in and check in with many of your comments. Thanks again. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ruth Ann.
Yep.
Have a good night.
Thanks for having me, Stuart.
Happy holidays.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay.